Okay, we're on Daf Chaf tonight in Ksubas. So if you remember yesterday, we spoke about if you have a shtar, and there's two edim on the shtar, like the shtar normally has, it could be, a shtar chov, like an IOU note, and the two edim are dead. The two edim are dead, and then we're able to validate the signatures from another location, compare their signatures, but then two other edim come in and say, we know those edim were psulim, they were gamblers, let's say Msakei Bekuvia. So how do we handle the case? So Mar ends up saying on the Chaf Amud Aleph, around the sixth line, so Elamar of Nachman in small Aleph, Elamar of Nachman, Uki Trey Lahari Trey. So Rav Nachman says we're going to pit two witnesses against two witnesses. In other words, we have the original two witnesses and the other witnesses who are trying to undermine their statement that's written. We're going to leave the money wherever it is. So it means, let's say, if Reuven lent Shimon, $10,000, and this is the only star that Reuven has, so we're not going to force Shimon to pay back the money. And if let's take a look at the Rashi, the second arrow line in Rashi, it'll be in the possession of the lova, the borrower in Rashi, around the third arrow line. The Mkartahi, and if it's land, it was a conveyance of land, not an IOU note, Tamod Bechazkan Amoker, we'll leave land in the possession of the seller. With Katani Bebraita, Einemanim, and the fact the Brisa said, they're Einemanim. So the Brisa said yesterday that he says, so that the ones who are contesting the signatures are not believed. When the Brisa said that, so back in the Rashi, he says, we're in the fourth hour line of Rashi. Doesn't mean that we're going to ignore it and say now the star is good. And Lord Karim means we don't force the possessor of the document to rip it up. And let's say Reuven lent Shimon $10,000. This sounds a little dicey. So Shimon doesn't have to pay the money now. But if Reuven was able to seize some of the property of Shimon, we wouldn't force Reuven to get it out. We're going to leave the money where it is. Okay, again, let me just repeat for the people who came in late. So we said yesterday we had a case in the Brisa. You have a star, it could be a star chov, or it could be, a star mikneh, like a star that's evidencing the sale of property. Or is it more than evidencing the star could be the kinyan. In other words, when the star could be a star kinyan. In any event, the two Adam who signed it are dead. And then and we're able to verify their signatures from another place. So we know that that's their signature. And when we have the signature, it's like the Adam are like testifying to what's in the document. But then two other Adam come in and say, we know that those Adam at the time that they signed it were Psulei Edus. So the Gemara ends up saying that the way Rav Nachman understands the halacha, the way Bryce is teaching me, is uki trei lamhadi trei. The two are sort of going to cancel each other out. It's like Ede hafasha, and we're going to leave the money wherever it is. So if Reuven lent $10,000 to Shimon, Shimon gets to keep the money. And if Reuven was saying that he was going to sell, or he was selling a piece of property, we're going to leave the land with Reuven. We consider him to be the muchzak. He's the one that's in possession of land, we'll leave where it is. But if somebody would seize property, we're not going to rip up the star either. And if somebody would seize property, let's say Reuven lent money to Shimon, but if Reuven then seized some property of Shimon, then we wouldn't force Reuven to disgorge that money. We're going to leave the money wherever it is. Okay, that's the halakha we did yesterday. Everybody good? All right, let me go further in the Gemara. Okay, so now we're around eight lines down on Chaf Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, "Midi dahava nixei de bar shakya," like similar to what took place in reference to nechasim. Now nechasim means property, but usually means real property, and that's what it means here. Nechasei nixei de bar shakya. Bar shakya is real estate. Bar shakya zavi nixei. Bar shakya, he sold a piece of property. Is atu beitrei amri? Then two people showed up and said, "Shushot zavin." When he sold the property, he was out of his mind, deranged. Amri, then another two people came and said, when he sold the property, he was saying. So I have, you know, something contested now. So Amar Abashi, Uki Tre Lahadi Tre. Okay, now we have Mamona, but if you look on the side, it says Ara. Okay, Ara Bechesket Bar Shakya. We're going to leave the land in Bar Shakya's possession. Means that, and the way the Masipta Gemara had it, even if the buyer is already like on the land, but with the last book stock, the last one we know with certainty that was in possession of the land legally is Bar Shakya, we're going to leave the land in Bar Shakya's possession. It was like Uki Trey Lahadi Trey. We have two Adam versus two Adam. We're going to like cancel everybody out and put the money back to the status quo ante. He says, "Velo Amran," but we only said this halacha in the Gemara in the small Gimel. "Velo Amran the Itlay Chazaka Davate." That's only where Bacha has a chazaka, means an uncontested ownership going back to his father. Meaning, Bar Shakya's father. It's interesting because Bar Shakya, you know, sounds like a shote. So like that Lachor is his name, but it seems strange that the Gemara calls him anyway. But Bar Shakya got the property from his father, so he yarshin the property. So there's no question about the chain of title going to Bar Shakya, but there is a question about the chain of title leaving Bar Shakya. So we're going to leave it in Bar Shakya. Under those circumstances, we're going to leave the property with Bar Shakya. Aval leile chazaka tavate, but if he doesn't have a chazaka, in other words, uncontested possession going back to his father, he says the meaning that he purchased the property. So meaning shushotazabin. We could say that he bought it when he was cracked in the head and he sold it when he was cracked in the head. So if that's the case, his own title is somewhat questionable. So that being the case, we would leave the purchaser with the property because, in other words, the purchaser's right to the property isn't any worse than Bar Shakya's ostensible right to the property. So in those circumstances, we leave everybody in situ. Let's just see Rashi, and then we'll open up the floor for discussions. In the Rashi, Aval Leit Bahu Chazaka Davata, El Chazaka Danashe, he only has his own chazaka, his own right of possession from himself. He says, and Shekanaan, who he purchased it, Bahuksa Kubiyado Kikniato, Kach Mechirato. So then we're going to leave it with the buyer. Okay. Any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far? So it means the purchase of a shota is not a purchase, and the sale of a shota is not a sale. Yeah. All right. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts? Okay, I'm going to go on.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
Could be. All right. All right, let me see further than Gemara. Now, all right, so now we're back near the small dalet, around 15 lines down. Amar Rabbi Bahu, im zimin an edim el b'fnehen. Now, this touches on the topic that we spoke about yesterday. It says, Hazama is a certain type of impeachment of edim when you say imanu ve'yitim. That's the magic words when it comes to Hazama. So, in other words, Reuben and Shimon say that we saw Zvulun kill Asher in New York at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, you know, July 5th or whatever. And then Levi and Yehuda say, how could you say that you were with us in Chicago at that same day? Same time? That's Hazama. And then the halacha is Vasitim lo kasher zaman. That we do the first one's a chiddush that we believe the second Adam. That's a chiddush the Torah teaches me. That we believe the second group of Adam over the first. But we do. And then we do to the first set of Adim like they wanted to do to the first person. So Kasher's mom looked. So he wanted to kill them, so we would kill the Adim. That's the way it comes out. So the Gemara says Amos even Adim el b'fnehem. We only do Hazama b'fnehem means it has to be in the presence of the original Adim. U'machishin Adim shel b'fnehem. But Rabbi Bahu says Hachasha can even be. So that's different than what we learned on the top line in the Talmud, which is yesterday. So there, Rav Sheshit wanted to say that Hachash is Chud Hazama, just like Hazama has to be B'fneim, so too Hachash has to be B'fneim. But the Gemara is rejecting that here. You can do Hachash Shalom B'fneim. Hachash is, I'm just having contradictory testimony, and that causes me to, like, you know, cross off both Adim. So the Gemara says, "Hazama shlo b'fnehen." He says, "So So the Gemara says, so I'm sorry, now, it was getting ready to Mishlob Shlob of Neim. Now, but Hazama Shlob of Neim, now, as far as Hazama Shlob of Neim, which we said we can't do, it should at least be as good as Hachasha. In other words, Hachasha is, you know, a type of contradictory testimony. So he's saying Hazama has to be Bifneim. But the Gemara is saying, let's say Shlob Bifneim. But the Hazama should not be worse than the Hachasha. So, right, so it should be enough to cross it off. So that's what he's saying. Let's take a look at Rashi. In the Rashi, he does Hazama Lohavia. La'on sham, lo nefesh, lo mamon. In other words, it's true, I can't impose the penalties that take away the life or take away money. Hakasha havi v'atelik tan. But it is a hakasha. All right. Any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? All right. I'm going to move on. Okay. Now, Amar Mar. Now, this is going back to the Brisa that we did at the bottom of the Amud in yesterday's daf. So Amar Mar is like, it's a quotation from the Brisa. Amar Mar, yesh edim, who's there. This was the second part of the Brisa. Remember the Brisa, we had a star, and it was signed by Edom. And then in the second part, we said that we're able to verify the signatures. The Edom are dead. We were able to verify the signatures. So, but, and then the other people are coming in and saying that they were Pleiades, or they were Tanim, or whatever. So it ended up the way that Rav Nachman interpreted the Brisa. So we're going to ignore all the tests, not ignore, we're going to leave the money, Ukim Amon of Bechezkat and Marim. We're going to leave the money where it is. So in the Brisa, we said, Amar Marim, Yesh Edom Shetavi Adam who's there. If we have Edom that can verify that that's the signature of the people who signed the star, or we have samples of their signature from a different location, i.e., Mishtar Shrub Irar Behuchzak Bevetin, meaning a document that was contested in Bezdin, and then was established as a verified document in Bezdin. As a result of it being contested, the document was verified by the Bezdin, or maybe 5 or 10 years ago. So he says, "A ne'amani." So then now the Tan the Brisa says the second group are not ne'aman. But we said that in the end, we said a ne'aman means they're not ne'aman to force the owner to start to rip up the document, but we're going to leave the mamon cheskat mare. It was the way that the Rav Nachman interpreted. Now, but the Gemara is more focused on the one line in the Brisa. So, karalav arar in, lo karalav arar lo. So, the implication of the Brisa is that the document is only a good document to verify the signatures. In other words, I have a source document. The source document is now the document signed by the same Adim 10 years ago. So, that source document is only good because it was contested and then verified by the Bezdin. It says, so karalav arar in, lo karalav arar lo. But if it was not contested, then I can't use it. So the Gemara says, Masayle the Rabbi Yassi. That would seem to support what Rabbi Yassi says. Da'ama Rabbi Yassi, a mekanim shtar, el mishtar shkob arar, behuchzak beveitin. That you can only be mekanim shtar if from a shtar that was contested and established in Bezdin. Let's look at Rashi and then we'll talk. In the Rashi, a mekanim shtar, mitoch shtar acher. It means that I can only verify a subsequent star from, you know, star B from star A, Elam King Karar Lo Tushtar Haher in Rashi, Vuhutsak Bevaitin, Aide Ada, it was established, you know, through the Adam, the Lokarav Arar, Kashin Dilma Hukuf from Mizuyah, because otherwise there's a concern that maybe the source document is Mizuyah. How do I know the source document is a true document? But if it was contested in Bezdin would have gone through a process to, you know, to verify that the source document was a good document. Now, there's a whole tumult that the post can get into. So what about, like, why is it only that document? Well, why can't there's another type of document that's called like a henpeg, where the Bezdin certifies the signatures, even though it wasn't contested. So some post can say, you know, if it says a henpeg, some post can want to say that would also be good to be mekayim these signatures. Okay, and again, there's different ways to establish the veracity of signatures. One is if you have a prior document, we can compare the signatures, and the prior document was verified by Bezdin, and we'll see if the Edom are around, they verify their own signatures, would be, and we'll see in the next mission that's what we'll talk about. All right, any questions, comments to us, anything we did so far? Okay. All right, let me see what I have here. Okay, we have. Okay, let's take it further in the Quran. Now, okay, we're up to Amrin Neridoi. Okay, around 15 lines from the bottom. Amrin Neridoi, the Neridian say, Imekaimin Ashtar, El Mishtake Kubot, O Mishtake Sadot. Now, the Neridoi say, when it says Imekaimin Ashtar, it means that there's an alternative way to establish the veracity of signatures on the star. So I have the star that I want to, you know, verify. And now he says, in the coming star, El Mishtake Tubot. If, in other words, let's say the documents were not verified in Beis Din, but I have two ketubot that the same Adam signed. And the ketubah is, you know, a type of star. It's basically an IOU note. So if I have two, let's say the Adam are Reuben and Shimon, and I have two, and I don't know that it's a true signature on the star Chov, Reuben and Shimon. So it could be a Beis Din, it could be whatever the situation, it could be a Beis Din. So so I have a star chov that's signed by Reuben and Shimon. So he's saying that if I have two kubot that are also signed by Reuben and Shimon, I can establish it that way. Or let's say there were two, you know, stars, right, bills of sale or deeds of sale that were also signed by Reuben and Shimon, I could do it. Meaning, provided that if it's a conveyance that the purchaser was able to remain on the field for 3 years in quiet. Meaning, in other words, we want to establish that the source documents are true documents. How do we know the source documents are true documents? So the Gemara is saying, so one way is if the Beis Din has verified it, but the Beis Din here hasn't verified the previous documents. But if it's a deed of sale of Greenacre and Blackacre, and the purchases of Greenacre and Blackacre have been on the property peacefully, then it's reasonable for us to assume that these are true documents and they're evidencing the sale. And there's a question about how it would work with the tubas. So the Gemara says, Amrav Simi Barashi, Ubiyot saying, Yitakat Yadachir. So Simi Barashi says, yeah, that's a good way to prove it, like the Neridian say, but that's only, in other words, there's a litigant, and now I'm have these source documents. But the source documents are being produced by someone other than the Baal Din. In other words, the Baal Din is coming to court, and he's got a Shtar Chov signed by Reuben and Shimon. And Reuben and Shimon are not around. So to verify Reuben and Shimon's signatures, we could look at two ksubas or two Shtar Miknas that they did. But only if the one who's producing it is not the Baal Din. He says, Aval yad atzmo lo. But if the litigant himself is producing those documents, that's not enough to verify it. Why might not tachat yad atzmo delo? Why is it if he produces it not good? That maybe he, you know, he falsified the document. It was the third document that he's suing on now. Maybe he just, you know, saw this document and copied the signatures over. Forged it, right. So the Gemara says, so even if somebody else produces the documents, what would prevent the litigant from going and viewing the documents and still forging the document? The Gemara says, it's too difficult to do. In other words, he would have to go view the document, then go home and forge the document. Yeah, so the Gemara takes it. That would be very difficult to do. He says, okay, all right. So any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? Okay, everybody good. Let me see if I have it here. Okay, we're good. Okay, let's go further. All right, so now next Bryce is talking about a person writing down his ages. So there's two klalim I have to say. One is that there's a klal, if somebody's an aide, it's me PM a little bit sabam. Like they have to orally give the testimony, and it can't be written. It can't be a written recordation of their testimony that the aide is giving me PM a little bit sabam. All right, let's see in the Gemara. So the Gemara says Tan Rabbanan Koteva Dam Eidu Torah Shtar. And let's say I ask somebody to be an aide to a certain transaction, and the person is a little concerned that over time he may forget what he's seen. So he decides to record his testimony, whatever he saw, on a document. So the Brisa says, "Koteva damid v'tol shtar." Person could record his testimony, umeid aleha apilachar kamashanim, and then use it to testify even years later. So Amar Rav Huna v'hushazok ramiatzma. So Rav Huna said, "Yeah, but again, I have this din. It has to be piyam v'lapiksavam." So it means that, let's say, if Reuven is the aide, Reuven has to remember the incident, but he's using the shtar just to fill in some details. In other words, but he basically remembers what took place, but he's using, let's see, Rashi. Koteva dam in the Rashi, 10 lines from the bottom. Koteva dam, imasu e bedavar, if he was designated to be a witness for a certain matter, v'yare l'shoko, he's afraid, he doesn't want to forget it, kofar l'chatichat klach u'matznia. Write it down on a piece of cloth and store it away somewhere. Umeid al pi otok tav afil afar kam shanim, and then he can testify about it. Shezok rameyatzmo below riyad ashtar in his car kitzani tome ilav, meaning he remembers some of it. He doesn't remember everything, and this will help him. In other words, and then he'll only testify to what he remembers. But he remembers the basic transaction. He remembers, and then the shtar may help him, you know, remind him of other things. Then back in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, 5 lines at the bottom, or 6 lines, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afpi Shein Zokra Me Atzmo. Yochanan says, even if he doesn't remember on his own, but after he sees the document, it refreshes his recollection, and then he remembers it, he could also testify. Let's see Rashi. Afpi Shein Zokra Me Atzmo, El Achar Shiro B'Shtar Natan B'Liv Ovin His Car, Shlodish Takim Medu Kol Kach. In other words, after he sees the document, oh, you know,
It's not chab de chab mir de mond.
I remind myself. It's like French. Je me souviens. I remind myself. Okay. So there's nothing wrong with learning some Yiddish. Okay. So ichab mir gemant. Ichab mir gemant. Wait, what is it? What is it? Let me hear the sense. Mir, ichab zich gemant, der man. So there's no mir. There's no mir. Oh, okay. He says ichab zich gemant. What do you think, Avram Moshe? Okay, ichab zich gemant. That's what I hear. So that's what Avram Elimelech says. Okay.
Either way.
I can't hear you. So well, you're breaking up. All right, 1 minute. I got to move on. Now, he says here. So
either way.
Okay, he says either way. It's
said, either way. They don't do
it. Okay, he says it's either a chabzif or a chabmir. All right, we have a machloket about the from the Yiddishes. Okay, let's think back on the Gemara. So he says, "Ino tovosh dar meida leh filachar kamashan." But this we did. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar afpi shein zokra meyasmo. So back in the Rashi, sorry. So Rabbi Yochanan says, even though he doesn't remember anything, but then when he reads the document, it refreshes his recollection. He says, but if he doesn't remember it, then zero. The Torah says it has to be mipiyam from their testimony and not from something that they written down. So let's see back in the Gemara. So Amar Rabba, so Rabba says, 5 lines from the bottom, Shmami Nami Rabbi Yochanan, from Rabbi Yochanan's halacha, we can extrapolate. Hani beitrei diadi saduta. If you have two people who know edus, uminshi chad minayu, and one of them forgot, mitkar chad lechavre. One could remind the other one. In other words, what's the difference if the aide is reminded from something he wrote, or his co-witness reminds him, and then presumably he remembers on his own? So he says you could do that. So the ibayelu. So the guy asked the question, asmo mai. What if the litigant himself tries to remind the witness what he saw? In other words, can the litigant refresh the recollection of the witness. And the issue here is going to be, do I think a litigant is sort of like misleading the witness in a way, you know, that maybe didn't, in a way that, right, in a way that, you know, isn't the way it is. So the Gemara says, so Rav Chaviva Amar, Apilu Atzma, Rav Chaviva says, yeah, even litigant can remind the witness. Marbury Gravashi Amar, Atzma Lo. He says, absolutely not. Behilchata Atzma Lo. Halacha is, the litigant is not allowed to remind the witness, but turn page on the top line of Chafam Beis, Be'itzur Merabanan Hu, but if the witness is a Talmid Chacham, Afilu Atzmo, then even a litigant reminds him that it's okay. Why? It means, let's see the Rashi, on the top line, Afilu La'atzmo Shabal Din, the Tumer Rabbanan, Ilav Dechirami Anafshe Midkar Shapir, Lo Abahasamech Asfeka Lamekam Asude. Because if a Talmid Chacham isn't certain of the testimony, he wouldn't testify. So with a Talmid Chacham, you can rely that even though the litigant is refreshing his recollection, the Talmid Chacham is going to testify accurately. We'll do the story and then we'll talk a little bit more. He says, "Ki had Rav Ashi, have yidi le besadu to the Rav Kahana." He says, "Rav Ashi, Yeah. So Rav Ashi was a witness to something that Rav Kahana needed testimony for. And Amar Lei Midachir Mar Ha'isaduta. So Rav Kahana says to Rav Ashi, do you remember this Eidos, you know, whatever, 6 months ago? He says, Amar Lei Lo. He says, no. I don't remember this. No, he hadn't testified, but he had asked him to be a witness for a certain, I don't know, maybe transaction, or maybe it was a Milval Peh or something like that. And then he says to him, "Now I need your testimony. Do you remember, you know, this incident?" He says, "No." You know, he says, "You know, remember it was on Sunday. We were outside near the bridge, and I called you over. Blah 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 blah. Amalei lo yadana." He says, "No, I don't remember this." L'sof idkar Rav Ashi. Subsequently, Rav Ashi remembered what took place. Asilei. So Rav Ashi came, and when Rav Kahana didn't in the Torah, Rav Ashi testified on his behalf. Chazi Rav Kahana to have a machasim. So he, Rav Ashi, observed Rav Kahana, who's the Baal Din, and Rav Kahana is like stammering. So he says, Amar Lei, in other words, he's stammering because last I spoke to you, you didn't remember anything. Now you're testifying the way I had suggested. Amar Lei, misavar lach kasamichna. Did you think I'm relying on what you were prodding me with? I thought about it, then I remembered what took place, and that's the way it worked out. So under those circumstances, we could. All right, let me just say a few words, and then we'll open up the floor for questions, comments, and thoughts. Now, let me talk about this, and let me talk about, Now this is a piece from the Al-Hadaf about writing down, you know, the testimony on the shtar. So Rabbi Yochanan says a person is permitted to testify regarding a long forgotten incident which he was reminded of upon reading his recorded notes about the matter. Rabbi deduces that by the same token, if one's friend or fellow witness reminded him of a forgotten incident, he's permitted to testify about it as long as he recalls the facts after being reminded. Again, this is the Al-Adah by Reb 716. So the Hagos Ashri asserts that if a witness was called to testify in court, now there's another din, which is, so again, one rule is mipiyam v'lo mipik savam. It has to be from their testimony, not from something which is written. And the other rule is it's kevin shahigid. Once a person has testified, he can't revise his testimony. Right. So the testimony is locked in. So the issue is going to be what does the person initially say when it comes to Bezdin? So the Gosha Tree asserts that if a witness was called to testify in court, and he submitted that he had no memory of the incident, he would not be permitted to retake the stand after he recalls the testimony, because this would be an infraction of the rule. Kevin Shigid should be no closer market. A witness cannot retract or alter his previous testimony, which the Gemara had on Yud Chet Amud Beis. Consequently, he submits that reminding a witness of forgotten testimony is only possible if the witness was outside of court when he originally claimed that he didn't remember the testimony. So when Ghost Hashri is saying, whatever conversations, I don't remember this at the other, that has to be a conversation outside of Beis Din. And then the Baal Din says blah, 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 blah. And then when he comes in, he testifies. Otherwise, Kevin Shigid should be no closer magid. The Ran disagrees and maintains that when a person claims he does not remember or know something, it's not Haggadah Eidot. It's an absence of testimony. So if I say, I don't remember, so that's not Eidot. It's just saying, I don't remember any Eidot. So he says, and is therefore not subject to the rule of Kamen Shigit Shubin El Kozer Magid. So according to the Ran, if somebody came in and said, I don't remember anything, so then, and then later on, his memory is jogged, he could add on to it. The Mordechai maintains that if a witness asserts in the presence of Bezin, Eini Yodea, I do not know testimony, he cannot subsequently retract his words and claim that he does know testimony. However, if one claims Eini Zoher, I don't recall, he says, I don't remember the testimony, he's permitted to subsequently retake the stand after he recalls the incident, because that is not a retraction of his original statement, since the statement merely implied that he was unable to recall the incident at that time. The Gemara concludes that although others may help the witness recall the testimony, the litigant himself may not. He said, unless it's a Talmid Chacham. The Shulchan Giborim explains that we are concerned that the litigant may lead the witness and deceive or pressure him into, quote, remembering, unquote, inaccurate facts. Now, alternatively, the Rambam explains that the sage does not permit a plaintiff to pry the witness' memory because it appears suspicious to the defendant, for he thinks the witness is testifying about an incident that he doesn't really recall. So according to the Rambam, it's more like the Maris Ayin, and that's why we can't do it. He says that Tumim maintains that although a litigant may not prod the witness's memory, he is permitted to do so indirectly through the court or their agent. The litigant is permitted to repeat his version of the incident to the court or their agent and have them attempt to prod the witness's memory. So the litigant himself can't prod, but he could say, this is the way it took place, blah, 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 blah. Beis Yosef asserts that if the witness, after being prompted to remember by the plaintiff, avows that he now clearly remembers the entire incident, he is believed and he's permitted to testify. He says the Beis Yosef says that the Gemara is referring to a witness who is not sure whether he now remembers the incident on his own or whether his memory of the incident was corrupted by the plaintiff's prodding. But if the witness says, I remember with certainty right now, according to Beis Yosef, notwithstanding the fact that a litigant prodded his memory, he could testify. Says the Shvus Yaakov rules that just as a litigant may not prod the witness's memory, neither may the litigant's wife, because she's also suspected of slanting the facts in her husband's favor. However, other relatives of the litigant are permitted to prod the witness's memory because we do not suspect them of lying on behalf of the litigant. Okay, that's that piece. Now, one more piece, and that'll be it. Let me finish the daf, and I'll try to come back to this thing if we have time, which I think we will have time, but let me just finish the daf. Any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? All right, let's see back in the Gemara. There are different dinim. I know, like the best thing sometimes in terms of priority of who we handle in a best thing, sometimes we give a priority to it through a Rabbanan. And then the Gemara says, I can't remember other cases, there would be a different lacha for it through a Rabbanan. All right, let's see back in the Gemara. Okay, now. All right. Now, the next piece of Gemara is related to the part about memory and how memory will interact with halacha. So this is, the Gemara is going to quote a Mishnah from Masechet Ahalot. So Ahalot is one of the Masechet that we don't do with Daf Yomi, but nevertheless, we get it in Daf Yomi, different pieces of all the Masechet. So I think all the Masechet. So Ahalot is going to deal with, you know, if somebody's buried somewhere. So if somebody's ma'ahil on the kever, they're tamei. So obviously want to avoid that. So it comes out, the Gemara is going to talk about mounds, mounds, like a hill. So people, if there's a mound, people, that's a likely place where somebody might bury somebody because people don't walk on the mounds. So I don't want to bury somebody where people are going to walk over the kever. So that's what the Mishnah is taking up. So the Gemara says, Tanana Tam, we learn the Mishnah of Masechet Ahalot, Hatluliot, Hakrovot, Bein Li'ir, Bein L'Derech. Now, we don't understand this Mishnah right now, so we must be patient. But Tluliot are the mounds that are close to the city or the Derech. So we don't know what city and Derech means, but the Gemara is going to explain that the city means the city which is close to a cemetery. In other words, so there's a mound that's near a city, that's near a cemetery, or the Derech is the way to the cemetery. So the Gemara, again, we don't know this. The Gemara is going to explain that there's a concern that sometimes people, let's say it's late Friday afternoon, and they're late getting to the cemetery, they might bury the person rather than be Mechal Shabbos in the local mound, near the pathway rather than going to the cemetery. So whether there are new mounds or old mounds, tameo. In other words, we assume that there are tameo. We're going to assume at law that those mounds, for the reason that the Gemara will explain, are tameo. These are the city, but again, the city means the city that's close to a cemetery, or the near the derech. Harachotot, but the mounds that are far away, Torah. The new ones are Torah, because if somebody would have been buried there, we would have heard about it. We haven't heard about it. Ishano Tmeot. Ishano, I have to assume, are Tmeot. So again, the Mishnah says, Ezohi Krova, what is considered to be a mound that's Karov to the city or Karov to the Derech? Kamishimama. If it's within 50 Amot of the city or the Derech, that's close. The Ezohi Ishana, which is the old mound versus the new mound, and we said that was only, you know, with respect to the ones that are, you know, that are far away. So he says, Bezu Yishana, Shishim Shana, Divra Meir. Divra Meir, if the mound is already there for 60 years, that's an old mound. So the new mound, if it's far away from the city, far away from the Derech, I'm going to assume is Tahor, because if somebody was buried there, I would have heard about it. But if it's an old mound, according to Meir, means something which is 60 years old, then the mound, in other words, the mound was first put up 60 years ago or longer, then they have to assume that there's tumma with it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Krova, Shein Krova Imena. Rabbi Yehuda Omer is different. When we talk about something being close to the city or close to the derech, it means there's no other mound that's closer to it than this. So if this mound is 10 amot away, that's the one that's Krova. Everything else is not Krova. He says, Yishana, old means Shaina Dam Zoka. Nobody remembers a time when this mound was not there. That's what Yishana means according to Tana Rabbi Yehuda. So Lechora, I would think it means more than 60 years, because 60 years is always somebody around who remembers that. But let's say it's 100 years old, that would certainly be Yishana. Now, first the Gemara wants to touch up what the Mishnah means, and then we'll spring to action about our dinim, about memory. So the Gemara says, my year, my derech. What does the Tana mean when he refers to a city or a derech? Ilema ir, ir mamash. If it means like any city, derech, derech mamash, derech means any way. So misfeka mimachaskin and tuma. So the Tana of the Mishnah says that if there's a mound that's near the ir or near the derech, we don't know for sure that somebody's buried there. We're going to assume somebody's buried there. So we'll assume tomb of that place. Don't go near that place. So from such a safek, so all over Eretz Israel, you're going to have places that are tame. He says, Vahama Rish Lakish, Ila Matsu V'tiru Eretz Israel. So this is a Gemara Masechet Nazir, which is coming up in Daf Yomi in about 3 months. So it says they found a pretext in Mutar Eretz Israel. So over there, the Gemara is talking about if you find a grave in your field, so you can, you know, reinter the body somewhere else. And then if you find another grave, you could reinter that as well. But if you find three graves, then you have to assume it's a Beit HaKvarot, that it was a cemetery there, and then certain dinim apply. But then Gemara says that if, let's say, the person, he uncovered one grave, he moved it. Then he uncovered another grave, he moved it. And so the third grave, he can also move it, and even though and Reish Lakish, and we don't have to assume that that it was a cemetery there. So Reish Lakish says, like they found any pretext, I mean any svara that would permit, halacha, you know, that they would have a situation where they're not going to cause section of Eretz Yisrael to be tame, they would use it. So, but the point being, if does it make sense that if Reish Lakish says we're going to use whatever we can to make a svara that Eretz Yisrael is not tame, I'm going to say all the mounds near cities, all the mounds near every derech is tame. So it means like all of Eretz Yisrael, half of Eretz Yisrael is going to become tame. So the Gemara says, so Amr Bzeira, ir hasmuch le Beit HaKvarot. So Bzeira says, ir means a city that's close to the Beit HaKvarot. Means I found a mound near a city which was near the Beit HaKvarot. The derech Beit HaKvarot. Derech means the way to the Beit HaKvarot. So that's what he's talking about. Now, so again, we haven't explained this whole Mishnah yet. So the Mishnah is teaching me, we have two situations. What the first part is, I found a mound that was near the city, which is near the cemetery, or a mound that's near the derech, which is the official derech to the cemetery. So, and according to Rav Meir, it means within 50 amot of each one. So in each case, I'm going to assume that the mound, there's a dead body in the mound. That's what I'm going to have to assume. Now, we'll see. So the Gemara says, Bishlema derech beta kvarot. So the Gemara says, I understand the way to the cemetery. Why would I think that there's somebody buried in the mound near the way to the cemetery? Because sometimes it becomes ben hashmashot, it means it's getting late on a Friday afternoon. They're doing the kvura, and they figure they want to do the kvura, and the sun looks like it's setting, and they say, we don't have enough time, they're going to bury him right in the mound. Because they want to bury him in a place where people won't pass over. So that I hear the chashash with that. Let's see the Rashi about that. He says the Rashi, the mitrami ben hashmashot till erev Shabbat, back in the Gemara, he says, but if I have a city which is near the cemetery, everybody goes to the cemetery. Why would I? There was the city is like the cemetery is right outside the city. Why? What? Everybody's going to go to the cemetery. Why would I bury somebody in the mountain near the city? So Amar Chanina, Mitosh Anashim Kovrot Sham Nifeleim. So he says that women who miscarry, and it means they're somewhat embarrassed about miscarrying, they'll like sort of still or hey, bury the nafel in, or they might bury the nafel is the miscarried fetus in the mound. Or he says, Mukishkin is somebody afflicted with boils, but it sounds like they said, you know, Hansen's disease, leprosy, like, you know, they have wasting of different limbs and the limbs fall off, sadly to speak. The limb is also gives tumor, and those people also don't want to make a big to-do about it. They bury themselves there. So the Gemara says, Ad chamishim ama azla yilachuda, says that if it's within 50 amot of the city, the woman or the person who lost the limb would go by themselves and take care of it. But but if the mound is more than 50 amot away, she's not going to bother with that. She'll take somebody with her. In other words, she feels maybe, I don't know, dangerous or embarrassed, but she'll take somebody with her. Now she'll feel secure and she'll go to the cemetery. So having established that, so that being the case, so in Achinami, I have to be concerned with the tail, which is near the city, near the cemetery, or the tail, which is near the derech. But if it's not that way, if it's not a city that's close to the cemetery, and it's not a derech there, so the only thing I have to worry about is the if it's a tail yishana, if it's an old, what does the Mishnah say again? The Mishnah says, if it's far away from the derech, it's far away from the city, Harakoko, the ones who are far away from the city that's close to the cemetery, or it's far away from the derech that's leading to the cemetery. So I only have to assume that the Yishanot are Tame, not the new ones. So therefore, the tomb bears Solom Chaskinan. We don't assume that the new ones have, you know, Tum and Eretz Yisrael, other than that. So now we've got to relate this back to our Sugya. So Amar Rav Chisda, Shmami Na Rav Meir. So Rav Chisda says we can extrapolate from Rabbi Meir's opinion. Remember, Rabbi Meir said that if it's Yishanot, I have to assume Tuma, but if it's Chadashot, I don't have to assume. And what's Yishanot and what's Chadasha? So Yishanot, if it's more than 60 years old. So then maybe people don't remember anymore. So he says, so Shmami Rav Meir, Hai Saduta, Shishin Mitkar. That when it comes to Edus, up to 60 years, people remember. It's Phelo Midkar. But more than that, they don't remember. In other words, here, if it's an old mound and it's more than 60 years old, so then I have to be Choshesh that maybe somebody's buried there and nobody remembers about it now. That's if it's Hadasha, then everybody would know about it. So all the recent mounds that have been put up in the last 60 years, so then we'll remember if there's somebody buried there or not, or a Nafel. But if it's more than 60 years, not. So he wants to say that the more than 6 years, people don't remember anything. But no, it's not true. You could distinguish between the cases. Over there, it's not incumbent on anybody to remember what took place with the tail. In other words, I'm not responsible to remember what happened with the tail, so I don't remember. About Hacha, we're talking about Eidos, Timon de Ramulei, up to the Tuvanami. In other words, if somebody says, I want you to see this incident, I want to be my aide, so that even more than 60 years he'll remember. If, you know, in other words, he knows that he has to remember that testimony, so that there's a call before I said, so you better remember the call. It says, Gora says that if it's something that's not incumbent upon a person, then he might not remember it. Like Gora says, All right. Who's got questions that comes to us? He could remember, right. According to the Tanya Rameyer, that's the implication of the Gemara. Okay. Now, let me just do a little bit here, and then we'll go to the last Mishnah, and then that will be up to take. Now, he quotes over here the Mishnah Halakha. The Mishnah Halakha was by Ramanash Klein. He wrote that it's incorrect, except in pressing exceptional cases, for Rav to answer questions over the phone. And a Rav should certainly not respond over the phone to people he does not know, so it will inevitably lead to mistakes. So the Mishnah Halakha says a Rav should never paskin over the phone. For anybody, but especially somebody he doesn't know. He says, this ruling was challenged on the following basis. The only related restriction that could be invoked for this ruling is that testimony must be given directly from the witness to the court. It may not be submitted to the court in writing. The PM will be ksavam. It would seem, however, that this restriction is a biblical decree that is limited to testimony. It's only by Aegis and Bezdin. And welcome back. Welcome back, Aaron. It cannot be applied to other cases like answering questions. Additionally, in other words, this is like the response to Rabbi Menashe Klein. Additionally, Rabbeinu Tam allows a witness to submit his testimony in writing, and there is no reason to think that using a telephone should be any worse. So therefore, it should be permitted to ask and respond to questions over the phone, especially when it provides significant benefit to the questioner. The Mishnah Halakha replied that his hesitation is not at all related. He said, that's not why I said don't do things over the phone. Rather, his hesitation is from a practical perspective. The concern is that people have a tendency to be terser when talking on the telephone than they would be if they were talking to Rav in person. In other words, I try to like shorten up the fact scenario. Consequently, they may decide to delete some details, thinking that they are not so important, when in fact, they could sway the halakha from one decision to another. This also causes the Rav to make assumptions regarding certain matters that may not be true that will ultimately lead to an incorrect ruling. Another concern is that the Rav may answer the question quickly and upon further consideration may decide to change his ruling, but without knowing who asked the question, he would be unable to contact the questioner to inform that he changed his position. So that those are some ha'aros with respect to answering it on the phone. Okay, now there's a there's another story. I'll save the story for the end. We'll do the next Mishnah. In the story from the end. Okay, let's see the next Mishnah. Everybody with me? Okay, now, Manitin, we're around 6 lines from the bottom on Tafamid base. Okay, Manitin, Zomer, now we have a document with 2 signatures on the document, but now I want to verify the signatures. So, Manitin, Zomer, Ktav Yadiv, Zek, Ktav Yadiv, Shal Chabir. In other words, Reuven and Shimon signed the document. Now, Reuven looks at his signature, he says, I recognize that's my signature, and I recognize Shimon's signature as his signature. And Shimon looks at the document. He says, I recognize Reuben's signature, and I certainly recognize my own signature. So each signature has 2 Adam testifying as to each signature. So let's see back in the Gemara, the Mishnah. So many Zomer Ktav Yadiv, Zek Ktav Yadosh Chaviri. Zomer Zek Ktav Yadiv, Zek Ktav Yadosh Chaviri. So they're Neaman, and now they've established, they verified the star. Zomer Zek Ktav Yadiv, Zomer Zek Ktav Yadiv. But let's say each one says, I recognize my signature. I don't know anything about Shimon's signature. And Shimon says, I recognize my signature. I don't know anything about Reuven's signature. So Rebbe says that's not enough to establish the bona fides of the star. They need somebody from the Shuk who recognizes their signature as well to have 2 Adam for each one. But the Chachamim says they don't need to be Messiah of somebody else. In other words, each person, according to Chachamim, I believe that we'll talk more about this tomorrow, is Neman to identify his own signature, and that's absolute evidence that's his signature. That's the way the Chachamim want to say. Okay, now let me just do a story. Any questions, comments, thoughts, what we did so far? All right. That's according to the Chachamim. Okay, now let's do story, and that'll be it for today. Now, this is talking about amputated limbs, which we spoke about. A certain Jewish man was unfortunately forced to surgically amputate a limb for medical reasons. After the man had recovered from the surgery, he remembered learning in Ksubas Chafam and Beis that those afflicted with Mukashchin, most likely what is now called Hansen's disease, which would be leprosy, would bury their limbs that had fallen off. The man asked the Shvus Yaakov. The Shvus Yaakov was a Rav in Germany, I think in the 18th century. So the man asked the Shvus Yaakov if he was obligated to bury the limb, as is perhaps implied in Ksubas Chafam and Beis. In other words, he's getting into the din. Let's say a person has an amputated limb, or what does he have to do with that limb that's amputated? Is he obligated to bury it? So from our Gemara, before, it sounds like he would, because the Gemara says that the people of the Mukesh Shin might have buried it in the mound or whatever. So the Shvus Yaakov replied, this is no proof. Perhaps they buried the limbs because they wish to, but there is no obligation to do so. However, one must nevertheless be careful with the limb so that a Kohen may not enter the room where it lies and become defiled by it. Okay. The note of Yehuda, who was also in the 18th century, he says, concurs that there is no obligation to bury the limb of a living person. He too explains that the reason why the Mukesh Shchen did so in our Gemara was to ensure that they got defiling, nobody gets tame. In a contrary view, the Pachad Yitzchak Zitzal reports that once someone's limb was removed from him, Bezin did indeed force him to bury it. The Ma'avariya book brings the Sefer HaLikutim of the Zivra Yosef, which says that the Rambam Zitzal once came to someone in a dream and told him to bury his severed finger. He says, despite these divergent opinions, the Shvus Yaakov still brought a very compelling proof to support his position. So the Shvus Yaakov says, it sounds like no obligation, but I'll talk in a minute. In Baba Kama Pehe, the Gemara asks how we can evaluate the pain, the tsar of losing a limb, when has already been compensated for the actual loss and use of the limb by paying nezek. What? In other words, it's tsar ripui shevet, and you know, tsar ripui shevet in both. So I already paid you for the, in other words, your limb was severed. The person who negligent severed somebody's limb. So he was already paid nezek, you know, damages, you know, for the loss of limb. So how do I evaluate the tsar? He doesn't have the limb anymore. So he says, the Gemara states that we evaluate how much a person who has a dangling and useless limb would be willing to accept as a compensation to cut off his limb. In response, the Gemara rejects this as overcompensation, since the fact that his limb will be used to feed dogs of necessity is an element of shame that makes him demand a higher price. Such a figure will necessarily include some degree of payment of boshet. So we see clearly, if Chazal entertained the hypothetical situation of limb going to the dogs, there's no right obligation to bury properly. Okay, I was only surprised by this story. The evidence is, as far as I'm aware, today, what we would tell somebody to do is they bury it in the basic pharos if you have a limb, but it means a limb that's got a bone. If it was a limb with a bone in it, so then you would bury it in the basic pharos, and you know, and then when you're buried, it's buried. That would be the way it would go. All right. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Let's say and repeat. In which case are you talking about? What's the first case? We had a million cases today. Oh, the first, yeah. You're not testifying with someone else, but on your own, in other words, you're called in to verify the signature. Right. In other words, yourself. So according to the first opinion, you're verifying your own signature and Shimon's signature. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. In other words, we need two Adam for each signature. The second one saying just one for each one. Okay. All right. Let me stay with this one second.